Yeah, what's Universal Time? Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Ray Kugel reporting the death of Mullah Omar officially confirmed. The Islamist movement formally announced Thursday that Mullah Omar died of illness but gave no details of when or where, saying only his health deteriorated over the last 15 days of his life. The announcement sheds no new light on whether a statement earlier from the Afghan government is correct in saying Omar died 2 years ago. Pakistan said Thursday the next round of Afghan peace talks are being postponed at the request of the Afghan Taliban leadership. Qazi Khalilullah is the Pakistani Foreign Ministry spokesman.
You know that on 7th of July, the talks actually took place here. And what we are saying is that we are going to facilitate the second round as well.
Foreign Minister Khalilullah said Pakistan remains hopeful the Taliban leadership will stay engaged in the peace process. The Nigerian army says it rescued 59 women, children, and elderly men being held hostage by Boko Haram. Army officials say soldiers raided Boko Haram hideouts near the northeastern city of Maiduguri. The officials say many of the terrorists were killed and a number of weapons and vehicles seized. An ultra-Orthodox Jew stabbed six people, two of them seriously, during a gay pride parade Thursday in Jerusalem. Witnesses say the alleged attacker jumped out of the crowd and began stabbing people despite a heavy police presence. Israeli police say the suspect was freed from prison just 3 weeks ago for a similar knife attack on a gay pride march back in 2005. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu reacted, promising that justice will be served. This is VOA News. U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry is launching a five-nation tour of the Middle East and South Asia beginning Friday in a bid to strengthen economic and security ties and ease concerns about the Iran nuclear deal. Secretary Kerry will begin his trip in Cairo, where he and Egypt's foreign minister will co-host a strategic dialogue on the domestic situation in the country and the regional fight overall against terrorism. Outspoken Chinese artist Ai Weiwei is in Germany to visit his son, the first time he's left China since his passport was revoked in 2011 after a crackdown on dissidents. Chinese authorities gave him back his passport a week ago. Ai says his travel plans are currently uncertain after British authorities refused to grant him a full six-month business visa, claiming he lied on a visa application form about his criminal record. Investigators in Toulouse, France, will start examining a piece of plane debris found on Reunion Island to determine if the numbers found on the object correspond with a Malaysian airline jet that mysteriously vanished in March of last year. The 2-meter-long fragment, a wing component called a flaperon, was found Wednesday on a beach on Reunion Island, east of Madagascar and more than 3,500 kilometers from where the Boeing 777 was last tracked. Australia's Deputy Prime Minister Warren Truss, who's been leading the search for the plane off the southwest coast of Australia, called the discovery a potential breakthrough.
It's been in the water for a year and a half now, and it's moved, obviously, a considerable distance. So it won't be all that helpful in pinpointing precisely where the aircraft might be located. But if this wreckage is linked to MH370, it'll certainly confirm that the aircraft has gone into the water in the Indian Ocean area.
The Malaysia Airlines flight carrying 239 people took off from Kuala Lumpur, Malaysia, in March of 2014 on its way to Beijing. It vanished from radar more than an hour later over the South China Sea. The U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service says it's opened up a probe into the killing of Cecil the lion earlier this month. The American dentist who is accused of the killing in Zimbabwe remains in hiding amid global disdain for the slaying. The Fish and Wildlife Service says it's been unsuccessful in reaching the dentist, Walter Palmer of Eden Prairie, Minnesota. The White House says it will review a public petition to extradite the American dentist who's accused of killing the lion. The U.S. economy made a solid advance of 2.3%, that in the April to June period, after a harsh winter, a small gain posted. The Commerce Department reports that a surge in consumer spending and new export gains pushed the world's largest economy ahead in the second quarter. I'm Ray Kugel in Washington.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Friday, July 31st, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Nigeria's army rescues 59 hostages from Boko Haram kidnappers.
Whenever there is a success of this nature, it goes a long way to boost the morale of not just the fighting forces, but the overall Nigerian population also.
Colonel Sani Kukasheka Usman is Nigeria's military spokesman. The widow of South Sudan's founding father, John Garang, will talk about developments in Africa's youngest country. Global outrage continues over the illegal killing of Zimbabwe's Cecil the Lion. And are Liberian lawmakers making too much money while the poor struggle to make ends meet?
We are victims, and I went to honor school. We are victims of circumstances. We are victims of misinformation. People squarely bring off of what we don't have.
That's Representative Toba Mulba of Liberia's Bonk County. An attempt to liberalize abortion laws in Malawi sparked a debate, and voting rights increases the number of minority politicians in the United States. Those stories plus Mark Oldman's sports and our listener of the day are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Nigeria's army said Thursday it rescued 59 women, children, and old men who were being held hostage by Boko Haram Islamic militants. Military spokesman Colonel Sani Kukasheka Usman says soldiers raided Boko Haram hideouts near the northeastern city of Maiduguri, resulting in the killing of many terrorists and the seizure of a number of weapons and vehicles. Usman tells reporter Peter Clotty that the military operations are part of the army's mission to raid the country of Boko Haram militants.
As part of the effort to rid Nigeria of Boko Haram terrorists, troops of particularly the 21 Brigade of Nigerian Army and some elements of Nigerian Army engineers cleared a notorious terrorist camp at Chagori and Santumari villages in Borno State. Of course, during the raid, they were able to chase quite a number of terrorists, recover a Land Rover vehicle and a T-Pack truck. Then the troops also were able to rescue 59 people that were held captive by the terrorists.
This comes sharply moments after the massive military shakeup. So is this a morale booster to the army fighting terrorism?
Of course, whenever there is a success of this nature, it goes a long way to boost the morale of not just the fighting forces, but the overall Nigerian population also.
With these rescued individuals, what happens to them? Will there be rehabilitation because they faced trauma because of the kidnapping?
Yeah, exactly. With the first and foremost, you know, the military's job is to make sure that they were rescued. And of course, we were able to rescue them, caregivers, and they will be processed to ascertain their status, and they had to be treated. Of course, the military were able to give them first aid, you know. And of course, the National Emergency Agency and other non-governmental organizations will take care before the issue of rehabilitation and integration into the society.
Colonel, we heard reports that the chief of staff, military chief of staff, had decided to have a major shakeup of the Nigerian army. What can you tell me about this?
Yes, yesterday, the chief of army staff, Major General Chukwu Buratai, has approved the redeployment of quite a number of officers from various units and formation to other places. In fact, about 334 of them, you know, with effective date, some of which will start today, others will take effect from Monday and some days after. And this has affected some of the principal staff officers at the defense and army headquarters, as well as some of the general officers commanding the division and other key appointments in the Nigerian army.
Were some of the military leaders in the fight against Boko Haram involved in this military shakeup?
Yeah, exactly. When I said formation, if you look at it, except for the 7th Division of the Nigerian Army, all the general officers commanding have been changed, a new set again, and it affects some of the brigade commanders all over the country. It was a comprehensive posting and appointment.
Colonel Sani Kukasheka Osman is Nigeria's military spokesman. He was speaking with reporter Peter Clotty from the capital, Abuja. Since the administration of President Ellen Johnson Sirleaf, Liberians have been complaining that their lawmakers make too much money while ordinary Liberians are struggling to make ends meet. It is estimated the lawmakers make about $12,000 a month, including benefits. But according to Representatives Toba Mulba and George Mulba of Bong County, Liberian legislators are victims of misinformation and are being demonized because of their positions. The two lawmakers said their lawmakers make very, very little compared to their colleagues in other countries, particularly Kenya, Nigeria, and Ghana. The lawmakers are challenging Liberians abroad to a face-to-face debate on the issue.
I'm Honorable George S. Mulba, representing District Number 3, Bong County. I've been in the legislature since 2006. During our interaction across the United States, people have been carrying such opinion, and it is better for us to use this platform to make some of those clarification. We make $14,000 Liberian, our basic salary. Then we have $2,500 United States the transportation allowance. Then you have $1,900. That is what comes out directly in terms of physical care. The rest of it goes to all the utilities that we use. So the issue of Liberia in the United States holding the view that we are making too much money, it is not proven by fact.
Somebody also said to me, suggested that how come the Liberian legislators get so much gasoline allowance? Some of them have so much that they have set up gas stations.
This is Honorable Tukba Mulba, former deputy speaker and also representative to ECOWAS from the National Legislature. Let me say this. The gasoline, you have a generator run at a house by the legislature, and you have staff, and you are pressing to go to your constituent and come to work. They fail to know that some of us live in the rural part of Liberia and we need to go to come back. The quantity of gasoline they're talking about, it aims up to 500 gallons of gas. Yeah, about 360 gallons that come to the representative. So for the reason, we disagree with most of the argument, and we will call them for a debate. And it shouldn't be on Facebook debate. It should be a debate that will bring the budget, and the budget line will show off where are we making so much money compared to our colleagues in Sierra Leone, compared to our colleagues in Ghana, compared to especially Nigeria. They make far more than us.
Pretty soon, you, the legislators, will have a chance to take a look at the Liberian Constitution.
Yeah.
There was a constitutional convention. Some recommendations were made, and you will have a chance. Some of those recommendations have to do with the length of time that the representatives and the senators stay in power. So when it comes, where would you stand?
Thank you very much. I do agree that the tenure of office, especially for senator, 9 years, is too long. I submit to the argument. And I also agree that there's a need to reduce the tenure of office for a senator and come to a representative. I do agree that there's a need to reduce the tenure of office because when the tenure of office is reduced, the issue of rebellion becomes limited. When you have a
What do you mean by rebellion?
I mean this as a country that just came from out of war. And because people perpetuate themselves in power, those in the opposing side of the government who always say, 9 years, I think the democratic spirit will be too long. As a result of that, people become rebellious. To sum up all of the argument, let me say it to you here on the issue of financial impropriety. We are victims, and I went to honor school today. We are victims of circumstances. We are victims of misinformation. People squarely blame off of what we don't have.
That was Toba Mulba, a member of the Liberian House of Representatives from Bong County. You also heard Representative George Mulba, also of Bong County. They spoke with me here in Washington, D.C. Yesterday marked 10 years since one of South Sudan's founding fathers, John Garang de Mambio, was killed in a helicopter crash on his way from Uganda to South Sudan. Garang is the founder of the ruling Sudan People's Liberation Movement and the Sudan People's Liberation Army. He also negotiated an end to the country's 21-year war with the government in Khartoum. John Tanzel, VOA South Sudan in Focus program, spoke with Garang's widow, Rebecca Nyanden, about the civil war in South Sudan and the inability to resolve it.
The vision of New Sudan has been living on with him, even in the first war. And then also the South African rainbow country also gave us a lesson that people can live under a united country. But he was a visionary leader who could drive that. Now you could see us with a small vision of South Sudan. We are not able to move with that vision. The vision of the SPLM, we have dropped it. The dream of people of South Sudan is shattered. So you can see how difficult a situation of a charismatic leader when he dies, everything dies with him, and especially in our case in southern Sudan.
You're a leader in your community, you're a leader in South Sudan. A lot of South Sudanese respect you for what your husband has done for this country. What is the problem with the leaders of South Sudan? Why are they not bringing an end to this fighting?
The problem is that we as a leader of South Sudan, we are very selfish. We don't think about our people. We are people who have not governed ourselves before. We have been in a struggle all our lives. But after the struggle of 21 years, I thought that people have developed allegiance to the country, which has taken the life of people. And on top of that, the leader, the captain of the ship, died. After that, when we came back, we rushed to position, we rushed to salaries, we forgot about the disadvantaged groups, we forgot about the people of southern Sudan. So our problem is selfishness. We need power sharing. Some people are talking about federalism. People are talking about wealth sharing. These are not the priority now at this moment as we are speaking.
This new document that has been circulating from last week called the South Sudan Compromise Peace Document. What is your take on this document? Do you agree with the proposal in that document?
If you put me there, I would say yes, because what I wanted is to achieve peace. As for Dr. Riek, what he needed is security. And he will have the army for the period of the interim period. The government of South Sudan has been given 53%. What else are we delaying the peace? I don't see why the peace is being delayed.
That was Rebecca Nyanden, widow of one of South Sudan's founding fathers, John Garang. She spoke with John Tanza of VOA South Sudan in Focus program. You're listening to Daybreak Africa on The Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Friday, July 31st. Daybreak Africa time is coming up at 17 minutes past the hour. The Malawi Law Commission is considering a new bill liberalizing abortion. Government statistics indicate that 70,000 women in Malawi have mostly illegal abortion each year, and 17% of them die in the procedure. As Lamek Masina reports from Blantyre, the move is garnering mixed reaction from Malawians.
Abortion is illegal in Malawi. It is punishable by a maximum of 14 years in jail, except in cases where pregnancy threatens life of a woman. Despite this, women still seek illegal abortion services. Malawi spends about $1 million United States dollars per year in treating post-abortion complications. The new termination of pregnancy bill seeks to reduce this. Justice Esme Jombo is the chairperson of the Malawi Special Commission on Review of Abortion Law.
We are extending the grounds on which abortion can be procured. If a woman is carrying a pregnancy and the doctors say, but maybe what you're going to give birth to is a malfunctioned child, that will not be compatible with life, then the woman can decide, I'll give birth or I can terminate the pregnancy.
The new law also allows for abortion in pregnancies that result from rape, incest, and defilement. Crispin Suwanda is the national coordinator for the Coalition for Prevention of Unsafe Abortion. He told VOA that the new bill is still too restrictive.
Statistics show that 80% of the women and girls who procure abortions are in permanent relationships or married. Now, if a person is married, can they qualify to procure abortion under rape? If a person is in a permanent relationship, is having casual sex, and then is pregnant, it means that they will not qualify.
Reverend Morris Muntari is totally against abortion.
Abortion can never be allowed from a spiritual point of view because it is sin, raping, incest, whatever. But when somebody has conceived, that is it. A mistake has been done by the one who was raping. You cannot punish a baby who is in the womb.
Muntari says the church can only allow abortion where the doctor said first that the life of a woman is in danger because this is an illness and not abortion. Lamek Masina for VOA News, Blantyre.
The outrage continues over the illegal killing of Zimbabwe's Siso the lion by an American hunter, James Palmer. More than 137,000 people have signed a petition on the White House website calling on the Obama administration to extradite Palmer to Zimbabwe. Meanwhile, many are asking, why is Zimbabwe allowing the hunting of lions, which are considered globally as endangered species. Untungamile Nkomo of VOA Zimbabwe Service reports.
Conservation activists agree that the wild lion population is declining and that the big cat is now an endangered species. But it's a different story in Zimbabwe, where their hunting is lawful. As long as one can shell out a couple of thousands of dollars, like Cecil killer James Palmer. But just why is Zimbabwe allowing the hunting of an animal facing extinction? Zimbabwe Parks and Wildlife official Geoffrey Matipano explains.
Lions are not endangered species in Zimbabwe, and they can be hunted under, you know, sport hunting. The other thing is that you need to have a quota. So a quota is set, you know, based on the scientific and social, you know, factors.
Matipano's sentiments were echoed by Permanent Secretary in the Ministry of Environment, Prisi Mupashiriwo.
In our region here, especially in Zimbabwe, what is endangered species is the elephant and the rhino. The lions, because of the numbers that we have, you'd find it has been very low.
Mupashiriwo pushed back against accusations that the Zimbabwe government has not been sufficiently outraged by the killing of Cecil.
The Parks and Wildlife Authority is seized with this matter. We are actually the complainant in this issue.
Chairman of the Zimbabwe Conservation Task Force, Johnny Rodriguez, says it is deplorable that the government continues to allow the killing of lions against evidence that the lion population is dwindling across the world. He adds that his organization will push for laws that declare lions an endangered species in Zimbabwe.
Well, they'll have no option but to change the law, because the thing is, you know, these animals, as you said, are becoming endangered. And, you know, in Africa in 1980, there was 80,000 lions. Today, the closest figure to that is 23,000 left in the whole of Africa.
Elsewhere, about 138,000 people have since signed a petition on the White House website calling on Secretary of State John Kerry and Attorney General Loretta Lynch to fully cooperate with the Zimbabwe authorities and to extradite Walter Palmer promptly at the Zimbabwe government's request. However, Zimbabwe has not indicated it will seek Palmer's extradition. Reporting in Washington, I'm Tungamile Nkomo.
50 years ago, U.S. lawmakers approved and then President Lyndon Johnson signed the Voting Rights Act of 1965. The measure outlawed racial discrimination in voting, providing federal enforcement of the right to vote for millions of African Americans in many parts of the southern United States. In the second installment of our special VOA series, The Voting Rights Act at 50, correspondent Chris Simpkins introduces us to some elected officials who, without the Voting Rights Act, would never have had the opportunity to serve their communities.
Former Atlanta Mayor Shirley Franklin cherishes the personal letters of civil rights leader Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. at the city's Civil Rights Museum.
So you'll see there typewritten letters, handwritten letters.
Franklin spearheaded efforts to secure the papers that chronicle King's accomplishments, like leading efforts to win voting rights for millions of blacks 50 years ago. She sees herself as a product of the 1965 Voting Rights Act, which wiped away racial discrimination at the ballot box and led thousands of blacks into a career of public service.
When I was in college, I could not have been mayor of Atlanta. It was impossible. It was impossible to think that a woman, but certainly an African-American woman, had no opportunity to even dream of such. The Voting Rights Act changed all of that.
Now you start to see tens, hundreds of thousands of blacks being able to vote in elections. And this is also sort of really important in terms of sort of the growth in terms of the number of black elected officials in the United States.
Political science professor Andra Gillespie says the law had a powerful impact in boosting black political representation nationwide.
They counted in the hundreds in the mid-1960s, and so now we count them in the tens of thousands.
How you doing?
The Voting Rights Act also opened the door for other minorities to seek elected office in places like Texas.
Latinos make up about 17% of the state's voter population, and that number is growing. So too are the number of Latino elected officials.
It's part of the reason why I ran, because, you know, I want to help everybody in all walks of life in my district.
Rick Galindo and Larry Gonzalez are among a small but growing group of Republican Latino lawmakers in Texas. Gonzalez says while most Latino legislators are Democrats, Republicans are making gains in attracting them.
We know there are dozens elected at the county level and at the city level and at the school board level. And I think we've identified dozens of conservative Hispanic elected officials in non-legislative capacities that I think would make fantastic legislators.
Democrats and Republicans agree the country has come a long way in 50 years. However, contentious political divides remain over protecting the integrity of the vote versus adopting new voter restrictions that might harm opportunities for minorities to serve as leaders in their communities. Chris Simpkins, VOA News, Atlanta.
It's time now for Daybreak Africa Sports. Here is Mark Ouma in Johannesburg, South Africa. Very good Friday morning to you, Mark.
Good morning, James. In our Daybreak Africa Sports News, we begin with volleyball. Defending champions and hosts Egypt beat Tunisia 26-24, 25-18 and 25-21 to retain the Africa Men's Volleyball Championship title in Cairo on Thursday night. This is Egypt's eighth title and sixth consecutive triumph. Morocco beat Algeria 3-1 in the bronze medal playoff. Cameroon is fifth, followed by Rwanda, Botswana, Kenya, then Mauritius. Turning to athletics, Hicham Sigueni and Brahim Taleb clinched a 1-2 Moroccan triumph in men's 3,000-meter steeplechase at the IWF Diamond League in Stockholm, Sweden on Thursday night. Kenyan Hilary Kipsang-Yego placed third. Djibouti's Ayanle Suleiman carried the day in 1,500 meters. South Africans Anaso Jobodwana and Sunet Fulyun were runners-up in men's 200 meters and women's javelin, respectively, while Kotso Mokwena was third in long jump. In football, Sudan's El Khartoum play Kenya's Gor Mahia as Uganda's Kampala City Council Authority face Tanzania mainland's Azam in the semifinals at the Council of Eastern Central Africa Football Association's SEKAFA Kagame Club Championship in Dar es Salaam, Tanzania today, Friday. The finals and the bronze medal playoff is set for Sunday. Meanwhile, Zambia play Ivory Coast as South Africa engage Zimbabwe in Confederation of African Football Under-23 Championship qualifiers today, Friday. Tomorrow, Saturday, Uganda host Egypt. On Sunday, Republic of Congo play Nigeria. Mali face Gabon and Tunisia encounter Morocco. Elsewhere, Ghana play Cameroon. Kenya welcome South Africa. Zimbabwe face Ivory Coast. And Equatorial Guinea play Nigeria in Africa Women's 2016 Rio de Janeiro Olympic qualifiers on Sunday. In India, Ocean Island Games. Madagascar plays Seychelles in reunion today, Friday, while Comoro Islands engage Mauritius on Sunday. Finally, in motorsports, the two-day Mount Gorilla Rally Championship starts in Nyamata, Rwanda today, Friday. It is the fifth leg in the Africa Rally Championship Series. And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports News. I'm Mark Ouma in Johannesburg, South Africa, wishing you all a sporty weekend. Back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Mark. Have a very good weekend, and we see you again on Monday morning. Briefly, before we leave you, a summary of Africa news. Nigeria's army said Thursday it rescued 59 women, children, and old men being held hostage by Boko Haram Islamic militants. That's it for this Friday, July 31st edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for spending this week with us. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Shryak, as well as post editor Mark Oldman, along with our engineer, Jim Harriman. I am James Barton in Washington, wishing all of you in Africa a very good weekend.
Next on Let's Talk, join host Sunday Shomari and his guests discussing home-brewed drinks. This lighthearted show covers topics of your interest with some hilarity. Let's Talk comes to you Mondays at 17:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa.
Next time on Straight Talk Africa, we'll introduce you to some of the continent's best and brightest
as we spotlight the 2015 Class of Mandela Washington Fellows. Join host Shaka Sali and his guests on Wednesday at 18:30 UTC as they discuss U.S. President Barack Obama's Young African Leaders Initiative. That's next time on VOA Africa.